Josh, it's so good to have you on the Grove Collective podcast, man.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Excited.
It has been a joy and an honor to just continue to get to know you better. You're one of my closest friends. And I know a lot of people probably, especially at the Grove, know you as worship leader, worship pastor. But I want to give them an opportunity to get to know you on a more personal level through this podcast
well.
Yeah, man. And so today we're going to throw some questions at you where we're going to get to know you a little bit better. And we're also going to springboard our series where we're doing a worship and creative series too. So we're going to talk more about worship.
Love that.
And what that means for all of us as human beings, right? Because worship isn't just for worship leaders. It's for all of us. And so we're going to get into that. But first and foremost, what I wanted to do, man, is we have this segment where we do some rapid fire questions.
Oh, great.
All right. You ready for
this? I'm ready.
Okay. So the first couple are easy, and then I think they're going to get a little bit harder and better. So the first one is easy, man. It's how long have you been here at the Grove for?
I've been here since 2013.
2013.
Hard to believe.
I know.
Yeah. Next year will be 10 years.
Wow.
But I've just loved it. I love our church so much. I mean, you know, I've been in thousands of churches around the world.
Yeah.
And the Grove is a really special place. So I'm so glad God brought us here. Thankful that my family's been here. We've loved this place.
Yeah, you and I have talked many times, and you always bring up the fact that you have been to so many different churches, and there really is something unique and special about what we have here at the Grove. Yeah. And I think everybody feels that even when they come onto our campus.
Yes.
You know?
And I remember hearing about the Grove from Palmer, because I met Palmer on a tour that we were doing with the Afters, and he had a book that was coming out, so he was speaking on the tour about his book, and he was on our bus. And when you're on a bus with somebody, you get to know them really well, and we both share love for coffee, so every town that we were in, we'd go find some local coffee shop, and so I got to know Palmer pretty well over the course of those, you know, 30-plus shows.
Yeah.
And I just loved his heart for missions. Mm-hmm. I loved his heart for justice. I loved hearing about kind of the vision for the Grove and the church that the Grove was. And I remember even on that tour thinking, man, I got to go visit the Grove. It sounds like a really special place. And so years later, I was actually in Europe with my family, because I have family over there, and we were visiting them. And I was in Europe, and it was some weird time, because he was texting me from the U.S., and he said, hey, Josh, would you ever consider moving out to Arizona and basing out of Arizona and being a part of worship at the Grove? And I was thinking, oh, my wife would never move to Phoenix. I've been there in August. I know what it's like. It's brutal. I know the feeling of walking through a parking lot and feeling like my shoes are melting off.
Yeah.
My wife would never go for that.
Where were you guys at?
We were living in Texas at the time.
Which?
So we lived in Dallas. And we lived in Dallas for years. Our kids had been born there. And we had a lot of roots there. But, but all my family had been kind of moving out of Texas. And so we were kind of the last ones there.
Yeah.
And so we knew we were ready for a change. We thought about it'd be cool to be out west. That thought had come up. But not something we had really given any serious thought.
Yeah.
But my initial response was, man, I love the way the Grove sounds, but I don't think my wife would go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I brought it up to her, she's like, wait, that's the Palmer that you brought up to me before. That's the Palmer that you said, if you were going to work with a pastor in ministry, like he is a pastor he'd love to work with.
Mm.
And I had told her that years before.
Yeah.
And that I just loved his heart, the way that he thinks about ministry.
Yeah.
That it was a little different. And I just loved that. And so she said, well, why don't we go visit Chandler and see what it's like? The worst thing that happens is we have a trip and get to see Palmer and Veronica and get to see the Grove. So we flew out. Palmer was very smart, and he flew us out in February.
Yeah.
And the temperature was like 70 degrees.
Best time of the year.
It was so nice. He put us in a hotel in Scottsdale, walking distance to everything. And so we had this amazing trip. And but we visited the Grove. And man, from the moment we walked onto the campus, it felt like home.
Yeah.
And just the people that we met so warmly accepted us.
Yeah.
And we just felt welcomed.
Yeah.
And some of the friends that we met that weekend are still some of our best friends here.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. I mean,
that
long, almost 10 years later.
Yeah.
So after that, we were like, okay, we could see ourselves living here. Chandler's a really cool town. We actually, you know, live in Gilbert, and Gilbert's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And so we moved our family out.
Yeah.
I told them, hey, we're going to do it. I love the Grove. I want to be a part of what's next. And we could build something really cool with the worship there.
Yeah.
And it's been an awesome journey. Love our church.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely somebody who I think contributes to that culture that I think that you were so attracted to as well, you know? Mm. And I feel like our culture here is that we welcome you no matter what your background is.
Yeah.
Like you are welcomed here.
You are welcome.
Yeah.
As you are.
As you are.
Because that's how we are with God. I think that's how the kingdom is. And my band, we're called The Afters. And the reason I love that name and why we named our band that was because it was a term from the Middle Ages for a party that would happen after a big gathering when you had like a big elaborate, the rich and the poor were separate. You had the nobles and the servants, and the servants would serve and the nobles would be served, but they never mingled.
Yeah.
And I just loved that I heard that they would have a big party afterwards for the servants, for the poor people. Mm. And it was called The Afters. And the word got out among all the nobles and the wealthy that that was a lot more fun in there. So they started slipping out and going. And it was the first time that there was a mingling of class. It didn't matter where you were from, what you looked like, what your status was, your income level, you were welcome. And that's really how God's kingdom is. I feel like the Grove is that way.
Totally.
It doesn't matter where you come from, what you look like, what language you speak, what your background is, what your politics are.
Right.
It's a place where you're welcome.
Yeah. No, I believe that. I believe that. And we feel that here, definitely, man. And you also, too, place a very, very high priority and value on your family. Share a little bit about your family, man.
Yeah, I love my family. So I have four kids.
Yeah.
And an amazing wife named Kara. We got two boys, two girls, Ethan, Adeline, Amelie, and Owen.
Mm.
My son just graduated.
Dang.
And he's been helping out at the Grove in the sound booth. He's about to go to audio production school.
That's awesome.
That starts here soon. But yeah. Our family loves Arizona. Arizona's been a really good place for us.
And, yeah.
We're thankful that God brought us out here.
Here's a question too, because I feel like you've been doing music for a while, right? When did you start your music journey? But then how did that lead to you becoming a worship pastor?
Yeah. Well, I started music when I was just a kid.
Yeah.
My dad, he was an amazing musician. And he would put me on his knee when I was like 3 years old and start teaching me how to tinker around the keys. And I kind of had a natural talent for that when I was a kid. And so they put me in piano lessons. And that just really stuck. Like I kind of flourished in that.
Yeah.
And I hated every moment of it because it was classical music. And now I love classical music. But when you're a kid and all you want to play is the popular songs that you love, playing Mozart and Bach is just really, really boring.
Mm.
And so I would do all these performances where I had to be in a tuxedo, and I hated that. I hated wearing ties and all that. So I ended up dropping out of piano lessons when I was in my teens. And it had been a big part of my life because I won competitions and played with symphony orchestras, and it was kind of my life.
Yeah.
And our family, we planned a lot of things around that. And then I was like, I can't do it anymore.
Mm.
It became a source of anxiety too. It wasn't fun. And then I went to a Michael W. Smith concert. First off, I heard Michael W. Smith's music and I was like floored. Like I just loved it. I was like
just captivated.
Because he played piano.
Yeah.
And some of his music even had classical roots. You could hear it. Like where you'll hear stuff that kind of sounds like Bach in there,
or
especially his older stuff. And I was like, wow, you can play piano and have a lot of fun and lead people to God.
Yep.
And share your faith through it. And I just love that. So I went to a concert, and that was the night I was like, that's what I want to do.
Mm. It's so funny how God uses people that we can relate to make such a big impact on our lives.
Yeah, to kind of...
Because you saw...
To give us vision.
Yes,
Like to me, it was like my eyes were open that night as to what the future could look like.
Totally.
And I was with him recently, and I told him that. I was like, my life would be very different if I hadn't been there that night.
Yeah.
And I'm just grateful for that. So when I started learning guitar, there was actually a Nirvana song that I wanted to learn. And that's what made me pick up a guitar for the first time, because it was easy. And started writing songs on guitar when I was like maybe 14.
Mm.
And then when I was just out of high school, there was a guy, Matt Fuque, who you know, he's in my band, The Afters. Yeah. He was at a college group, and they needed help with the worship there. And so he invited me to come and help lead worship there. And that was so fun.
Wow.
And that was my first time kind of leading worship. And then my church heard that I was doing that. So they asked if I could help lead worship. And I always loved being in that place where you are with your family, your church family,
yeah.
and you're leading them into the presence of God, because really beautiful things happen in that space.
Yeah.
It's a special thing
to
be able to do that. And so I started doing that, and then when we started touring with the band, we got signed. We were so excited. We're gonna hit the road. And the first 2 years, it was a whirlwind. Mm. And it was amazing in so many ways because it was lots of opportunity. But we were gone like 250 days out of the year.
That's crazy.
Maybe even more than that.
That's crazy.
And it was so hard on our families. Like, my wife kind of looks back on those years. Like, you'd look back and go, oh, that's really exciting. A lot of great stuff happened and your career started taking off.
Yeah.
And you were blessed in so many ways. But my wife would look back and see that as like a really hard season.
Yeah.
Maybe some PTSD from
For
those
sure.
years.
And, I can imagine.
And we had to learn a lot after that point. So honestly, after those couple years, we kind of got to a breaking point with the band where we realized this is not sustainable as we're doing it. We can't be gone like this. We can't say yes to everything. And we played a show with Casting Crowns, and we shared a dressing room for that show. And their singer, Mark Hall, he could tell that I was just kind of burnt out.
Yeah.
And he sat down next to me, and he was like, man, what's going on? And I was like, oh, everything's fine, everything's
for
good.
Sure.
He was like, no, what's really going on? And I just kind of gushed. I was like, man, how is this sustainable? How do you do this? Like, I feel like I'm being a bad father and a husband. I was at church the other day for the first time in who knows how long, and I realized nobody at my church knew that I was my parent or my kid's parent. Nobody knew that I was my wife's husband.
Wow.
And it felt terrible.
Yeah.
And so his response was awesome. He was like, well, it doesn't have to be that way. Like, why do you do that to yourself? And he said, you got to set boundaries in your life. And that was a big learning lesson that actually translated into being wise about setting boundaries and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And he said, if you're not called first to your career.
That's right.
Like, yes, that's something that God put in your life. That's not your first calling.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that in order of importance are way ahead of it.
Yeah.
You're called to be faithful to God, you know, to serve God with your life.
Mm-hmm.
You're called to love your family well,
yeah.
to love your wife well, to love your kids well, to be a good father and husband.
Yeah.
Like, career is down the list of important
right.
things.
Right.
And it's not the thing that defines you or should define you.
Yeah.
And so, man, it was a gut check, and it changed the course of the future, because I went home, and Matt, my band partner, and I, we had some serious talks and said, this has to change. And so we met with our whole team, and we committed, even if it's going to cost us financially, I don't care. We're going to put faith and family first, and I want to be at home worshiping with my church family this many Sundays out of the year. We gave them a certain amount that we were okay with being gone, and then the rest we wanted to be home. And we said, and we want this much time with our family, and we're not going to budge on that. So even if $1 million offer comes in, I don't care what, like, whatever it is, don't even bring it to me.
Yep,
because we're gonna be committed to this.
That's so wise, man. Because the impact and the love that we give our family is really what lives on long after we're gone.
Oh, 100%.
For sure.
And that's what your kids are gonna remember.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want my kids already had dad traveling a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we set those boundaries, because now they remember, well, dad came back for the important things.
That's right.
Dad set boundaries. They have that as an example in their life too.
Yeah.
You know, of what is important.
Yeah.
And
Man, I love that. That's important to hear too.
But it was on one of those tours that we did after that I met Palmer, and he saw that we were like real strict about, okay, we're going home for this amount of days and then we'll come back out. He saw me catching flights like either early Sunday morning or late Saturday night.
Yeah.
Even if Matt and I had to drive, you know, 6 hours to catch a plane to be home and worshiping with our families.
Yeah.
We would do it.
So that's when the gears were turning in Palmer's.
That's why he was like, well, if you're doing that at Dallas, he could do that out of Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah, he's a smart man. Especially to put you up in Scottsdale.
Because he's so smart.
So smart, but then in all reality, after you get here, you don't ever really go to Scottsdale.
Well, that's the funny thing about the culture here.
Yeah.
Like, we thought, oh, we'll go to Scottsdale all the time. It's what, 20 minutes away, 25, you know? And in Dallas, the culture is different.
Yeah.
My church was 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
And you don't even think about that. It's totally normal. And so we thought, oh, we'll go there all the time.
Yeah.
Well, people here do not leave their little 10-minute bubble.
No, they don't.
No.
Man, that is such a good reminder for all of us. I have a couple more questions that I wanted to ask you that I I think are just funny too. But tell us what your biggest pet peeve is.
Oh, my biggest pet peeve.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
This podcast is all about transparency.
No, so. I like that. It's hard because I don't have a lot of pet peeves.
I know.
I really don't.
If anybody listening knows Josh, he's always the glasses half full.
Mm-hmm. And almost to a fault. If anything,
to a
I've
fault.
Had to...
To a fault.
One of my pet peeves is that I can be that way and I need to not be sometimes.
So what...
So pet peeve with other people would be... so if you're in a conversation, even monologuer, and they're just taking over the conversation and not leaving space for other people,
yeah.
that can be annoying.
A pet peeve, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to reframe it. I'm like, well, they just need to talk.
Yeah. See, there I go.
But,
the glass is half full.
But
that's funny.
I definitely, that would be one. One little pet peeve, and this doesn't really bother me, but I'm like, wait, what? And this is funny because my kids, I have to watch how I respond with my, because my wife and my kids will call me out on it. Because I love trying new things.
Yeah.
I'll eat anything. I'll try anything out, you know, within reason.
Yeah.
But, when somebody, like if you're eating something that I think is really good and somebody's like, oh, no, I'm not going to try that. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What are you? Or if they don't like it, you know? If
yeah.
You don't like this?
Yeah.
And they're like, wait, wait, wait.
That's funny.
So somebody who's not willing to try things, that'd be a pet peeve.
Yeah.
But again, it's more of a challenge than anything.
Totally.
Because I'm like, wait, challenge is on. I'm going to get you to try this.
Yeah. What breaks your heart?
You know, what really breaks my heart is the way when I see people treating other people poorly out of anger, like that really does break my heart. Because I feel like in our culture right now, like we don't have a lot of compassion for others. Like we speak compassion, but we don't always live it out.
Yeah.
And so I see that a lot when I'm traveling.
Yeah.
I'll see people talking to other people, you know, condescendingly or with anger.
Yeah.
And that really does, that upsets me and bums me out.
Yeah.
If we just loved people the way Jesus does, imagine what the world would be like. My favorite Bible passage is John 15:12, where it says, and I command you this, this is Jesus talking, I command you this, to love each other deeply as I have loved you.
Mm-hmm.
And think about how profound that is.
That's like how the world will know that you are my disciples.
Yes.
You follow me, that you're part of what I'm...
And so we should be different. And so it breaks my heart when I see, especially Christians, the way, and these last couple of years have been so hard. We've had pandemics, we've had all the political stuff, we've had wars. There's been a lot going on in our world. Yeah. And when I've seen the way that even Christians have treated each other and talked to each other, that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, man, we gotta love each other.
Yeah.
If we loved each other, like the way of Jesus is loving even the people we don't like, loving the people we disagree with.
Right.
And it's easy to love people who are like us, and people who are just easy to love,
right?
But it's a little harder to love people that you disagree with or who get on your nerves.
Totally.
But that's the way of Jesus.
It is. And I think that it comes from, I think people forget just how brief our life can be, and we get so caught up in ourselves, and then we're self-centered, and so we treat people poorly. It's like, man, life is so short. We really do need to love each other well, you know?
Well, think about how that plays out. I always think through, how's that working out for you, right?
Yeah.
Like, when we don't treat each other well, how does that work out?
Yeah.
Like, you end up with a lot of division. You end up with a lot of angry people.
Yeah.
You end up with a really toxic situation.
Yeah.
Now, when you follow the way of Jesus and you love exorbitantly, unconditionally, like think about how that actually plays out.
Yeah.
Like that's a way that you solve wars. That's a way that you solve political unrest.
Yeah.
That's so many problems in the world would be solved if people literally just loved each other the way that Jesus and saw each other as someone made and loved by God.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful, I love communion. We just had communion at church. And one of the things I love about communion is that it's the table where we're all invited to, and Jesus sat down with his disciples. One of them he knew was going to betray him and was going to lead him to death, essentially.
Yeah.
And he still sat down with him. He still broke bread with him. He still loved him.
Still welcomed him.
Yes. It's easy to love your friends. It's hard to love Judas.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah.
But that's the way of Jesus.
Yeah.
And so I love communion because when we're called to the table, we're required to see the other people at the table as God's children, as loved by God.
Yeah.
Like we they're wanted there as much as we are.
Totally. And I think that that segues us to into the next portion of this series. We're entering into this series on worship and creativity. Mm. And I think everything we've been talking about is really out of the overflow and an expression of really our worship.
Yeah.
Even the way that we treat people. And I'm so passionate about this series because I want to kind of like break down this taboo around worship. I think for a lot of specifically Christians, but even people who aren't Christians or are outside of the church, we look at worship as this thing that happens through music or song or instrument, and we think worship is what worship leaders do on a Sunday, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I want to break down this stereotype around what worship is and have a real conversation on how that affects us in our daily lives too. So even for you as a worship leader, man, as we're getting ready to launch into this next series, how would you describe worship and like what that is for you as a worship leader?
Well, worship, people always think it, worship is music.
Yeah.
Like it's even a genre. You can look up worship music.
Totally.
And it's a genre of music.
Yeah.
But that's not what worship really is. I mean, worship is adoration and reverence expressed towards God.
Yeah.
And so that can play out in so many ways. It plays out in your life daily.
Yeah.
Music is a form of worship.
Yeah.
And as long as there's been the church, there's been singing.
Yeah.
You know, there's been music. They even say that there's Bible scholars who say that the earliest scripture, like Genesis, was actually liturgical. And you can see it in the first chapter of Genesis.
Yeah.
It's written liturgical and was most likely sung at some point in services.
Yeah.
And so, and you see David, right? He would write Psalms. Well, those were songs.
Mm-hmm.
You would have obviously the Song of Solomon, and
yeah.
there's a lot of music incorporated. It goes way back into our worship, but that's not where worship ends. And I always felt convicted, even as a young kid, that worship is something we do every day with how we live our life.
Yes.
And when you do things to the glory of God, you are living a life of worship. And you've heard like there's a song, Heart of Worship. You know, there's a that term, Heart of Worship.
Yeah.
And that's when you know God, and you're seeking a heart after God, and that compels you to want to live out your life seeking God every day and living and doing things to the glory of God every day. And it doesn't matter what you're doing.
That's right.
You don't have to be a musician to worship.
Mm-hmm.
When I worked at Starbucks back in the day, I felt like I was a missionary there, and I felt like I was worshiping through creating coffees, and that was a way to start conversations with people. And there's people who I would get to know and have relationship with and share my faith with that were just customers.
Yep.
You know, and people who I ended up inviting to church and seeing God move in their lives because of that. But it's something we can do every day. So I always said, you know, whether I'm making coffee or whether if I'm a dentist someday, and you wouldn't want me to be a dentist because that just sounds terrifying. But if I was, I would do that to the glory of God.
That's right.
If I was a teacher, I would do that to the glory of God.
Yeah.
I'm a musician, so I do that to the glory of God.
That's right.
How I express my worship.
Yeah, and I think it's important too, as we even launch into this series, I love how you said music is an expression of our worship. And it's how we express that adoration that we have towards God and the love that he has for us.
It's a powerful expression.
It is.
And what's powerful about it is that you are gathered. It can be by yourself, but most often you're with community.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you are with other believers who are all very different than you,
yeah.
right? And in some sense, we're gathering with people all over the world.
Yeah.
Because when we worship, there's people all over the world who are worshiping.
That's right.
So we're coming together as one body, one people, and expressing our adoration and reverence to the one who made us. And when you're in that space, I mean, I've seen amazing things happen in that space because I believe God is moving in that space.
Yeah.
He takes joy in it. He delights in it. And where his spirit is present, you're going to see amazing supernatural things happen. And we've definitely seen that.
I love that. Where his spirit is present, you're going to see amazing and supernatural things happen.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have two parts to this episode.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to wrap up this first part, but we're going to talk about how worship is more than just music and how that plays out in every single one of our lives and how we can encounter God's spirit in even what could feel mundane and ordinary, and that moment can become a supernatural moment too.
So absolutely. So when I drink my coffee,
yeah,
So you've seen, I have a huge collection of
these
mugs.
That's
right. Right? So when I travel around the world, I always get these mugs that have the city's name. Mm-hmm. And I have way too many of them, yeah. Right, from all over the world. But what I love about it is it turns an ordinary moment into something that is sometimes a spiritual moment. Mm-hmm. Because I go back to, like, this is Queenstown.
Yeah.
Well, I have thoughts of Queenstown. I'm thankful for that because we had amazing times in Queenstown, New Zealand.
Yeah.
But then I'm also reminded of the people that we know there. And it'll be a reminder to pray for them.
Yeah.
And we have some shows coming up in New Zealand this year. So it's a reminder, like this morning, I was praying for those shows.
Yeah.
And so you can have simple moments
totally.
That become worshipful if you let them.
Yeah, and that changes our life. It mm-hmm. really does. Mm-hmm. Josh, thank you, man. I'm excited to jump into part two.
Thank you.
Next week. So, yeah, man.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.